Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. It's still summer, but you know what? Daughter Emily is already headed back to school. Maybe your child or grandchild is headed back as well. If not already, pretty darn soon. We'll be talking about what you can do to help those kids deal with problems that may come up for them. And we have a couple of guests for you. Myrna Scherer is a development psychologist from Drexel University. She's the creator of social emotional learning programs for children and problem solving approach to discipline. Her books include Raising a Thinking Child, now in its second edition. And Myrna, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be back with you.
I want to introduce Tenley Kaler as well. Tenley is also with us. She's a family living educator at UW Extension in Door County, a national trainer of Myrna's program. And we're focusing on back-to-school problems, but they can also help out with other issues that may be affecting your child. So I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or I should say at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Tenley, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's go to Myrna first. Remind us about the basic concepts behind raising a thinking child.
Well, the whole idea is that as early as preschool, children can learn or are very good at thinking through for themselves how to solve typical everyday problems that come up in their lives with other children, with adults, including their parents and their teachers. Almost anyone who communicates with children can guide them to solve their own problems rather than telling them what to do all the time. Because after a while, children tune out. They've heard those suggestions and explanations 1,000 times by the time they're 3 or 4 years old. And then parents get exacerbated because, you know, the child tunes out. He's not listening. He's heard those explanations 1,000,000 times. And so I teach parents and teachers how to help children learn skills to think things through for themselves. And it guides behavior and prevents more serious behaviors later on because kids feel successful and cared about rather than just being yelled at and told what to do all the time.
Tenley, you've been teaching this program. What's been the response from the parents who use it and children?
Sure. In Door County, we've had the program for about 1 year now. Statewide, though, the program has been around for 10 years. So we've seen a lot of really good support from our parents and our communities because we know that the program works, that it's based in science and research. So every year, we have over 100 families that participate in the program. They're excited to see those changes in their family. They're excited to be able to communicate with one another in new ways that they hadn't thought of before.
What kinds of problems can we expect to see when kids return to school? Myrna, maybe I talk to you first about that.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, some kids are going to a new school for the first time. Some kids are going to school altogether for the first time. They're 4 or 5 years old. Those who are used to going to school might be worried that the next grade might be too hard, the teacher might be mean, or they feel test anxiety, or they're worried about maybe being bullied, or maybe they are the bully. That's a very important topic today. Or they feel peer pressures to do things they don't want to do with what I call friends they don't want to have. Or maybe the child is, you know, feels overwhelmed, that he feels overscheduled. You know, parents sometimes have a need to do their children's homework for them to get it turned in on time. That has consequences that we might want to talk about. You know, homework issues in general, making friends, you know, scared of the class bully. And I always say kids who are failing in math don't necessarily need more math. What they need is more social-emotional learning so they can not feel stress and focus on the math they're getting. So those are some topics, and parents who are listening might have other concerns, too.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about kids who are going to school for the first time. What can we do to help prepare them? And tell me, let's let you start that.
Sure. So kids who are going to school for the first time might have a lot of things swimming through their heads. And I think as a parent, one of the first things we can do is get to the root of what they're thinking about, maybe what they're concerned about. Asking them, what do you expect to happen? What do you think might be different? How are you feeling about these kinds of things? To open up a greater dialogue. And in reading Myrna's book or the workbook that she has, it really offers parents these concrete skills and words to use with children to ask those questions, to learn what their real fears are so we can help them solve those problems themselves.
I know my own daughter, Emily, started high school this fall. She's already in, but it was kind of nerve-wracking for her, even though she'd been going to school forever, it seems like. it was a little tough for her, and she was a little more on edge than she normally is.
I think it's really important, and as Tenley pointed out, to get at the root of what the child is thinking. You know, parents often might, start a long monologue about, school's going to be okay, you're going to be fine, don't worry. But kids aren't feeling that way. And if you ask the child to tell you how he feels instead of you telling him how he feels, that can start a conversation that might help put him at ease.
Yeah. Have you, Tenley, do you have some examples of instances? You've only been doing this now for a year, but some situations that you might talk about and how you told parents to respond.
Oh, sure. So our program, Raising a Thinking Child in Wisconsin, we focus on ages 4 to 7. So a lot of our parents have younger children, but sometimes there's older siblings, too, that are in high school. The big premise of the program is learning dialogue, or in other words, a two-way conversation to talk about feelings, to learn where one another is in a situation. So kids do get nervous about new situations. One of the things in the program are word pairs. So Myrna will lay out word pairs that we get to play with in the program. One of them is a set of good place, not a good place. And I had a family that was playing in the workbook, and they were trying to be silly and have fun because we love to have fun with this program. And they were saying, is the bathtub a good place to wear clothes, or is it not a good place to wear clothes? And later on, that child, they were in church together, and he leaned over to Dad and whispered, well, is church a good place or not a good place to take a bath? And they had a good time laughing about it. But later on, that child was able to use those words and say, is this a good place for me to leave my toys? Is this a good place for me to shout and run around? And, using words that maybe they've learned before, but now they're in a new way. And it empowers the child to be able to think through problems on their own.
Yeah. Talking with Myrna Scher and Tenley Kaler today about helping children with back-to-school issues. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Maybe you have a youngster or maybe a grandchild going back to school. Have any questions? What problems are your kids facing as they return to school? What's helped you deal with those issues in the past? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page. As you were talking, I was thinking about problem solving, and my daughter yesterday, she's getting ready and she's packing everything into her bag, and she's, I can't get this in the bag, and at the time, I was in the middle of making breakfast, so I said, well, I'm busy right now, keep at it, but if you can't get it done by the time I'm finished here, I will help you, and...
Silence. And what is it? What is it that she couldn't do, Larry?
She was trying to get her
her backpack filled.
Well, her computer somehow things were stuck in the, you know, and she's nervous and all this. And I just said, look, when I'm right in the middle of frying some eggs here, so why don't you, when I'm done with that, I'll help. Well, by the time I was done frying the eggs, she had it all resolved.
Yeah. Well, you know, one possibility is if the child doesn't have it resolved, and instead of one possibility is to take her to think through steps on how she could get that problem solved, and saying, you know, if you're trying to fill your backpack trying to put your computer in your backpack and you can't get it to fit in, where can you look to see, is there some reason why it won't fit in? What's the very first thing you could do? And, you know, let her tell you instead of, you know, just saying, wait until I'm done and then I'll help you, because, you know, you want her to do the thinking of how she can solve the problem. But it sounds like she did just fine.
Oh, yeah, she did just fine. More kids seem to be under pressure to perform well, even at younger ages, taking tests, playing sports, getting in the musical or, you know, the whatever, the little play you might have for your third grade class or whatever. How can caregivers help reduce that pressure?
Well, there's three different things you brought up here, but basically, again, you know, what do you think a parent might say to a child who, you know, comes home and says, you know, I didn't score any runs today, or I'm worried about tomorrow's test. Again, it's getting the child to talk about his feelings or her feelings and, you know, support them and not make light of, oh, you'll do fine. You have to study more or whatever. But if he's worried about the test, say, what can you do tonight so that when you go to school tomorrow, you'll feel less anxious? What's the first thing you can do when you're doing your homework? One step at a time. But again, as Ten Lee said, it's a dialogue, not a monologue. You want the child to participate in the conversation, not only to talk about his feelings, but to talk about what he can do first, second, third, and then say, if you do that, is that a good idea or not a good idea? What might happen if you do that? How will you feel if that happens? Well, what can you do so you won't feel that way if it's a bad feeling? But you're getting the child excited about thinking about it. You know, kids. One child, a four-year-old, came home and said, "Mommy, I solved a problem today." You know, and she felt so proud of that.
Oh, that's a great little story. Myrna Scheer and Tenley Kaler, our guests today, as we talk about helping children with back-to-school issues. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page with your questions or maybe with your own comments about what's worked for you. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll turn our attention to medical issues and talk about custom knee implants and how they can lead to faster recovery and even less pain. So I hope you'll join us for that. Right now, stay with us because we're talking about back-to-school issues and helping your kids deal with all the myriad kinds of things that can come up. With Myrna Scheer, development psychologist from Drexel University. One of her books includes Raising a Thinking Child. Tenley Kaler is a family living educator at UW Extension Door County, a national trainer of Raising a Thinking Child, and I Can Problem Solve. Again, join us at 800-642-1234. And let's take some calls. Max in Milwaukee will give you a chance. Max, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, and hi to your guest. As I was just mentioning to your producer, I'm looking for advice on how to approach potential solutions for my four-year-old and the two-year-old when you as a parent don't have an answer to their question. Is there any set of steps that we can undertake? I guess maybe one example that you just brought up, preparing for an exam, for example. My four-year-old is obviously not there yet, but if she was, and her preparation for exam might be way different from mine, and I don't know if that would work for her. So just looking for some advice. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Well, let me ask, are you concerned about her future or what she's worried about now?
Oh, I'm worried about now because she brings questions to me even now that I don't sometimes have an answer to.
Can you give us an example?
Simpler.
It would help.
I can probably come up with a solution that kind of a made-up solution. But, for example, how can I, she maybe had broken a toy, of some sort of an electronics toy, and she asked me to fix it.
Oh, and you don't know how to fix it.
No clue about how to fix it.
Well, I would talk to her about how it broke, first of all. Did she... throw it on the floor? Did she pull something out? See if you can get her to think about how it broke. And then if it really can't be fixed, that's a reality that she has to face. And then you ask her, what else she can play with that she enjoys just as much and not to throw it on the floor, and ask her to think, what happens when you do that? Are you going to do it again with a new toy? Getting her, and ask her how she feels about it, too. Because if you really don't know how to fix an electronic toy, and most people probably don't.
Right.
You don't want to just run out and buy her another one, because that doesn't teach her how to think about what happened. But what, do you have any idea how the toy did break?
I believe she dropped on it and then stepped on it.
On purpose, do you think?
Well, I wasn't in the room to tell, mm-hmm. and then she wouldn't tell me.
Yeah, I think you could question her about how the toy mm-hmm. broke, one step at a time. Without a threatening voice, because you don't want to scare her off to talk about it. You want her to feel comfortable and safe, because that'll help her think it through for the next time. What are you going to do next time we have a toy so it won't break? Well, ask her what she can do next time so it won't break. And she, can think of a solution. And if she can't, say, I bet if you think real hard, you can think of something. Rather, because you want to tell her. You think she doesn't know. But, get her to think it through. And she can tell you probably by the time she's 4 or 5 years old.
There we go. Thanks, Max, for calling. Appreciate your call. Good luck with your youngsters.
You can try that, Max.
Yeah, give it a shot. Thanks for calling. 1-800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page and post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page as well. Edwin on Facebook commented that these are important subjects for both parents and students. Of course, there's a fine line between being involved in your child's education and being over-involved. And then there are cases where the parent is not involved at all, which is maybe the worst case scenario.
I have a great quote from a father who, was always asked by his son to help him with his homework. Let's see if I can find that. Tenley, you want to address that while I'm looking for it?
Sure. Well, I agree with that comment that these are really important skills that we talk about. So skills of conflict resolution and impulse control, being empathetic or understanding how someone else is feeling, these are skills that we can teach really early to create a productive and a responsible next generation of learners. And parents do play a role in that. Parents are children's first and perhaps most influential teachers. So being able to have a program that empowers parents to help their children learn how to problem solve on their own when they're facing issues later on in life, they're better equipped to handle them productively.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and this is a father whose child always was asking him to help him with his homework, and he took him through, for example, a science project to help him slow down. He thought he has to have the answers right away, and he wants me to give him the answers. So his quote is, if I gave him the answers, not only would he not learn how to find them, he wouldn't feel the pleasure and pride that he does when he discovers the answers himself. And I thought that was pretty profound.
Yeah, that's great. What do you think just about homework? I tend to think that kids get too much homework these days, especially in the earlier years.
I agree with you completely, Mary. I think kids need time to be kids, and they'll have plenty of time later on to... I know some kids in first grade who they don't have time to play and be with their friends. I just think that's, you know, not... It's not healthy.
Let's go to Amber in Eau Claire next. Amber, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind today?
Well, I have a 10-year-old. He's going into fifth grade, and I kind of wanted him to try some new sports, like maybe track and field, doing some of those other sports. And he is just like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm only playing football, basketball, and baseball.
Ah.
And he says, because I'm only good at those ones. And I said, well, how do you know you're not good at track if you don't try it? And he's just dead set against it.
Tenley, you want to address that? Or I know you work mostly with younger kids, but if you have any thoughts, go ahead.
I do. Well, it sounds like he might be having some anxiety about his performance in those other, you know, skills. Track and field, he feels confident in football or some of the other sports that you listed. It also sounds like you asked him a question, how do you know? But maybe we can even switch that question, like, why do you think that way? Are there other reasons that you're feeling nervous about this? Does it really have to do with his friends, or is it that he really doesn't want to try, you know, try to dig in a little bit deeper? Myrna, do you have more to add to that?
Well, I'm just wondering, what's the big deal about trying new sports if he's happy in the ones he's playing, you know, and he wants to develop those skills more? I mean, there's only so many hours in a day, and why take him away from something he loves to try something that he doesn't really want to do? I'm just wondering what your thinking is on that. Why do you feel a need to do that?
Amber?
I just thought it would be fun if he would do... He's kind of a bigger boy, so I thought it would be fun if he would just, like, maybe try something different, like shot put or discus or, you know, something that's a little bit different, but maybe I guess that's not fun to him.
Well, in my opinion, just an opinion, I would just let him go with the flow. And if he gets tired of it, then bring it up again. But I wouldn't push him to do something he doesn't want to do, because he won't enjoy it. And he'll, you know, it'll just start tension between you and him, and you don't want that. Let him do what he feels he's good at and loves, and let him nurture that and just leave it alone.
Yeah,
that's what I would recommend.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kind of along with that, I was talking to somebody the other day who's, and this is a little older child, whose daughter didn't make a team, a particular sports team, and all her friends made the team.
Oh, boy, that's tough.
Yeah, and... I didn't have a lot of advice to offer, and I'm wondering what...
Well, I have a child in that situation, and the mother, you know, sat the child down after the child calmed down and said, you know, what are you good at? And it wasn't necessarily a sport. And it turned out the child said, I don't know, I'm not good at anything. I just want to be on the team. You know, my friends are on the team. And what she did was she said, okay, as soon as you calm down, what else is there in the world that you could do? And then the child wouldn't answer. And she gave her a jump start. She said, gee, how about music? And the child said, well, maybe I could play the piano. And so the mother said, well, would you like to take piano lessons? And to make a long story short, the child started piano and loved it and really got into playing the piano. And she stopped focusing on what she couldn't have and came to appreciate what she could have.
Excellent. Natalie in Wautoma, it's your turn now. Hi, Natalie.
Hi.
Hi, Natalie.
You were talking about homework, and The rule we have in our house, mind you, that my fiance is a college professor and I'm a full-time student, so we are busy anyway, and we can't just stop and do homework all night long with the kids. We have them work through their homework on their own, and then we will go back with them. And if there's a problem they didn't understand, if there's something that they had questions about, we address it after they've tried it on their own first. We don't ever just sit over them and do it with them.
I think that's great. And how do they respond to that?
If they have a way that they solve the problem and I look at their homework or their stepdad looks at their homework and we see a different way that we can teach them to solve it, we're not above teaching them ways that the school isn't teaching them either, because they should always have more than one way to a problem. They seem to handle that really well. It empowers them because
It sounds like you've read our books and done our program.
I know. I
haven't actually. This is new to me, but it's. But they have older sisters, and so we've been doing school for a long time, and we have found that it empowers them to know that they can do it on their own, because they will often come to me right away, "Mom, I can't figure this out." And I will tell them, try it one more time, and if you can't figure it out, move on, and we'll come back to it.
Now, you could take the content and take them through step by step if you had the time without telling them the answers.
And we do. We don't ever just give them the answer.
Then make sure that they ask them at the end, how do you feel when you solve problems so well? You know, with a big beaming face, and then they'll say, proud.
They often tell us that they're proud that they can figure out their homework on their own, and we try to give them all the tools to empower them to do that on their own, because we've given them the reality that mom's not always going to be there. I'm not going to be there when you go to college to solve your homework for you.
Exactly. You're giving them the skills now so they can transfer them. That's very important.
Yeah, I love that you said there's more than one way to solve a problem, because this is not just about homework. There's more than one way to solve every problem in life. And if they feel confident that they can think of lots of different ideas, then they'll have a better time when maybe they're dealing with bullying or peer pressure or some of those heavier life things.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to, before we get to Judith in Milwaukee, hang in there, Judith. Bonnie in Madison says her son was recently in a play and had a terrible bout of stage fright, causing him to run off the stage. What can she do to help him get over this experience? He's middle school age.
Well, that's similar to too shy to participate in a classroom discussion. Although I got to tell you a story. When I was 10 years old, I was in a play, and I forgot the line, and they had a cue person behind the curtain, and I said, "What? What did you say?" And the audience roared. I'll never forget that. But you know, when the child is too shy to participate, you can role play with them at home. You know, have them practice at home and pretend, you know, maybe even get some puppets and create a little audience that way and have them clap and get used to, you know, saying the lines and maybe bring friends over and practice. And, you know, if he doesn't want to do it, I wouldn't push him to do it. But if he wants to do it and try, and you know, that might be a fun way to help him out.
And if this was, but what about the aftermath of something like this? Let's say the child wanted to do it, and yet when he got there, he had stage fright, and now he's embarrassed. And how do you deal with, how do you help that child?
Well, there again, I would get him to do the thinking about it instead of, you know, telling him what he could do, and say, you know, when you get on the stage, you know, and think about it off the stage where it's calm and, you know, peaceful. What's the first thing you can do so that you won't feel afraid? How can you do that? How will you feel if you can do that and nothing bad will happen? Well, what could happen that's bad? Make him help him think it through so he realizes that nothing bad's going to happen. And the worst that can happen is he'll forget his line, like I did. I survived.
But he's probably,
so he doesn't feel afraid.
He's probably worried in this case about what are my friends going to say, or what is the teacher?
Well, then you have to think through what he's going to say to his friends if they do say something. Well, what can you say or do if somebody teases you about it? And get him that's a problem in itself to solve, how to deal with a teasing child. What can you do? What might happen if you do that? Rather than telling him what to do. And then say, good, you're thinking of ideas, what you can do. I bet you can really think of more. And again, you're getting him involved in thinking about it and not just passively, it's okay, we still love you and all that, because the child doesn't learn how to think about it when you do that.
Judith in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Judith.
Hi. I've heard a lot of things that sound like they'll be helpful to me, but this specific question is about my 3.5-year-old grandson, who has been in the same excellent daycare and preschool facility since he was one. And he loves it. He loves his teachers. He's popular. He has a lot of friends there. And he is going to be going to a new school starting in a couple of weeks. And he is adamant about the fact that he does not want to go there. He wants to stay where he is. And I just would like to know the best way for all of us, his parents and for me, because I spend a lot of time with him, to be talking with him about this.
Yeah, what? Why does he have to go to a different school?
There's been a change in the family situation, and his brother will be going to this new school, and it's impossible to just work out
the logistics
of having two kids going to separate places with two working parents in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, he'll miss his friends. He'll be in a new neighborhood. The school will look different. The teachers will be different. And these are all genuine, stressful thoughts for him.
And I will interrupt you just to say that we have introduced him to the school. We will be going back there at least once, if not twice more, before he is there. So he's going to be familiar with the facility. He's not going to be walking in cold.
Yes, that's very important. Another possibility is you could go with him to a store and have him pick out something very special that he's going to wear the first day of school. Let him pick out a shirt or a pair of pants or toy or something like that, and say this is for the new school. But again, don't buy him something that you choose. Let him choose it. And that's one possibility.
I like that.
Well, kids seem to, that does help when children are, this is not an uncommon problem, by the way. You're not alone.
No.
And as one constant in your child's life right now, just really listen to him. Listen to his thoughts and feelings and don't shut him off.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what he needs, is this one constant in his life. And then ask him what he can think of to make one new friend, just one new friend. What's his idea?
Mm-hmm.
And he's much more likely to carry out his idea than if you suggest it to him. Maybe is there any way he could see any of his old friends after school, or will he be too far away?
No, we've talked about arranging play dates so that we don't lose track of the kids that he's the closest to.
That's good. That's great. If it ever happened to you or anyone in the family, tell them your own story about moving if it happened to you. That might be helpful, too. But, the good news is he'll probably, especially at that age, adjust pretty quickly. And you have to stay calm, because if you get all tense about it, then he will, too. So if you stay calm, he probably will, too. And I think these suggestions might be very helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you. They really are. I appreciate appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Just to go back to your books, Raising a Thinking Child and I Can Problem Solve, just for our listeners, maybe tell us how those books are organized and so forth.
Oh, thank you, Larry. That's really appreciate that. Raising a Thinking Child is an actual curriculum with games and activities that parents can do with their 4 to 7-year-olds. And we also have that in the form of a workbook called Raising a Thinking Child Workbook. And Tenley can talk about that because Tenley actually uses that workbook that parents respond to. And then we have Raising a Thinking Preteen for parents of 8 to 12-year-olds and handling typical problems that come up with that age group. And then my newest book is called Thinking Parent, Thinking Child. And that is now in its second edition. Available now, what's lovely is it's on Kindle as well as in paperback. And that, of course, can get that from Amazon.com. And we have about 100 and some different topics that come up at various ages. And each topic is only 3 or 4 pages each, so it's easy to read on Kindle. And then we have the I Can Problem Solve programs that are conducted in schools for preschool through grade 6, which was our research based on those ages. And it can be easily adapted for grade 7 and 8 as well. But Tenley, you want to talk a little bit about Raising a Thinking Child and how you work with parents?
Yeah, I would love to. So the program that we run is an 8-week series, so parents get to come together, and we get to talk about some of these really cool concepts that Myrna has been sharing with us during the call. We work through her workbook, which is Raising a Thinking Child, and we love this because it's full of games for parents to play with their children at home. So not only are we talking during the series with parents, but they get to go home and play those fun games and learn from their very own parents. We play with word pairs. We play with different rooms of the house. And then there's also opportunity in the workbook for parents to do some self-reflecting, too.
Tenley, and these programs are available in many counties in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I believe right now 18 counties and tribal nations have them.
And where would we go to learn where to get involved with these programs?
Well, you can certainly call me, and I can give you my number, which is 920-746-2260, and I can help you try to find a program in your county.
Well, I tell you what, we are out of time, but I want to thank you both so much for being with us today. And Myrna, you've got a website, too.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. There's two that people can look at. One is my website at www.thinkingchild, one word, thinkingchild.com. And then there's another one that talks more about different aspects of the programs called it's iCanProblemSolve.info, I-N-F-O, iCanProblemSolve.info. So between the two of those websites, they should get a lot of information. And they can also email me if they have any direct questions for me at mshure@drexel.edu.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us today. I hope we have a chance to visit again. Thank you.
Oh, Larry, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope we have lots of new little problem solvers in Wisconsin.
Myrna Scherer, development psychologist from Drexel University, Tenley Kaler, family living educator at UW Extension Door County, and she's a national trainer of Raising a Thinking Child and I Can Problem Solve. And we have links on our Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show as well to all the things that they were just talking about. So you can just go to the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page and you can look them up if you didn't get them written down. We have about 700,000 knee replacement procedures performed annually in the U.S., and we're going to be talking about knee replacement and customized knee implants. That next on the Ideas Network.